I guess when I recorded on this one, or when I was recording the series of tapes, I must have missed this one side on tape number two. So somewhere down the road around tape number five or six, you may want to come back and play this second half, the B side of tape number two. It's going to be just a little reminiscent of some of the things that I think I missed as I was talking about some of the things that went on in my life. The summer that I went to Bryce Canyon, that I told about going there and working, during that school year, I had dated a girl in Ogden, the name of Evelyn Anderson, and we had a good time together. She was a lot of fun, and we enjoyed dancing and going to parties and so on. And then when I was at Bryce that summer, my parents came to visit down to the canyons, and they brought Evie with her, with them, and we enjoyed each other while she was there. But I realized that there wasn't anything overly serious with her, that she was just a lot of fun and we enjoyed each other. So when I went back to school that fall after working at Bryce, I really didn't date her very much, and started just going out with different girls and different groups. And then I met a girl named Elizabeth McKinstry, and we started dating, and we got along real well, and she was a lot of fun, and we had a good time. And after we'd gone together quite a little while, well, we talked it over and kind of decided maybe we'd get married. So I gave her an engagement ring, and we got engaged. And this lasted for a few months. And then I also then realized that she really wasn't the right one, that for some reason it wasn't going to work out. So I kind of tried to get her to break off the engagement, but she didn't seem to want to, and so finally one day I just had to tell her that I didn't think that it was going to work, and she got a little upset at me, but it worked out, and we broke the engagement, and that ended that. The reason I tell a little about that is because later on, I have already told you about in another area, I've told about meeting Lugene Barrett and becoming interested in her. And one thing I think I forgot to say was how I proposed to her. She was working at Clearfield, which was a little town just south of Ogden, and it had a big Army supply depot. And she worked there. She was a secretary for a major who was in the service there, and we had dated during that period of time, which I think I mentioned was very difficult because the war was on, and I was working on out at Hill Air Force Base, and there was three different shifts out there: the day shift, swing shift, and a midnight night shift. So it made it very difficult sometimes to work out dates. I might have to pick her up at midnight, and we'd go to a midnight show or something like that. But we had gone together, and from our first major date at about New Year's, and it came up to the first part of April or into the latter part of March, and I decided that I thought she really was the girl that I would want to spend the rest of my life with. So I called her up at work one day, and actually in a way to get a date with her for that night. And so when I called her, though, I said, I asked her if she would like to spend the rest of her life with me. And here she was on the phone, sitting in an office with this major across the other side of the desk from her, and she didn't know hardly what to say, and she was real flustered. She told me this afterward. So anyway, we arranged for a date for that night, and I picked her up at midnight, and And we went to a movie, and all during the movie, she said she was apprehensive. She didn't know whether I'd been kidding when I called or whether I was serious, and she just hardly know how to accept it. So, but at the end of the date, why, I gave her an engagement ring. I had one ready, and I gave her an engagement ring and told her that I was serious and that I wanted her to be the one that we spent our life together, and she agreed. And so then on the 7th of April, we got married, which started a long, many years of being together. I also mentioned about following the time after Frankie, who had been dating her, had gone in the service, they had broken up. He came home on a furlough one time after Jeannie and I had been married probably almost a year, and he came into town, and so he called up, and I was happy to hear from him, and so I invited him to come out to the house to dinner, and I broke the news to Jeannie that he was coming out and we were going to have steaks that night, and he was going to come to dinner, and I had told him when I talked to him, he said, well, it's all right if I bring a girlfriend, and I says, sure, so there'd be the two of them for dinner, and I don't think she was overly happy about it, but when he showed up at the door, I was sure she wasn't happy, because he had gone and gotten a date with Elizabeth McKinstry, the girl I had been engaged to, and brought her to dinner that night at our house. Needless to say, it was a very quiet evening. Frankie and I both were cracking up. We both had a sense of humor, and we thought that was a real funny joke. But neither of the girls thought that was funny at all. They just didn't have any appreciation for that type of humor. The following year, as I say, after I graduated from high school, I worked for a year. And then when I went to Weaver College for a couple of semesters, I met with some other guys actually during one of the lunch times when we were all just sitting around, and found out that they enjoyed playing music, same as I did. One of them played a guitar and a harmonica and was very good on it, and he also was a good singer and knew how to yodel. And then another one played a banjo, and another one played an accordion, and my brother, of course, played the bass, and I played the fiddle. So the five of us got together, and we would practice and play. We brought our instruments. And then we would, during break times in school, at lunch or any time we had a break between classes, we would get together and play and practice, and pretty soon we began to get pretty good. So I called around and made some arrangements and got us some jobs playing at entertaining, and we would go and we played for different organizations just to entertain them. We really didn't make a lot of money out of it, but usually they paid our expenses. One of the times, and I think it was the Rotary Club, was holding an international convention in Boise, and we had played for the local Rotarians there in Ogden, and they liked us, so they arranged for us to put on a program for them at their convention in Boise, and paid all expenses and a little money to us to go up there. So that was kind of a fun trip. We went up and played a program for that special deal in Boise, and that we called ourselves the Saddle Tramps, and we all dressed kind of like cowboy outfits, because we played more Western type music than we did really country, as country is popular today. The music we played was mostly the Western type music that we played, and we had a good time doing that. Jump ahead a little bit from that. Now, I also had followed through and gotten us into Las Vegas after we made the move there and were working in the motel. So I just thought I'd mention a few of the people that we got acquainted with that became good friends. Merle and Alan Bunker became real good friends of ours. Alan's father was the stake president over the stake there, we seemed to have a lot in common. When they first came there to live, they didn't they were just out of school and they didn't have any money, and they were living with his parents, which is fine, but as a couple and adults, it became a little bit hard. So that we found that they would like to spend quite a bit of time with Jeannie and I, because that gave them a chance to get away from home for a little bit. And so sometimes they would even stay overnight at our place as we would visit and go out maybe to dinner or something late in the evening. We'd come home and they would just stay there. Another couple that we got real good friends with was Vern and Trudy Waite. Vern was a dentist, and his dental office was just about a half a block down the street from where our motel was, and we got well acquainted, and they were a real fun couple to be with. Later on, they moved to Portland, and then Trudy died from cancer, and Vern remarried, and I think he's still up in the Oswego area just outside of Portland and works in the temple up there. I'll tell you couple of little stories about Vern that were kind of interesting, I thought. There was a little grocery store on the corner just up from us about a block. It was a little family type grocery store, and so it was so convenient and handy that we used to go there quite often for our groceries. And whenever Vern would get ready to pay for the groceries that he would buy in there, why, the owner would tack on a couple of dollars on the bill. And the one time I was standing there when he did that, and I said, "What's that for?" And so the grocer said, "That's grazing fees, because the whole time Vern's in here, he keeps eating. All the time he's walking around the store, he's eating things. So I charge him a grazing fee for while he's in here shopping." Also, I went hunting with him one time, or no, we actually didn't go hunting. We went up to visit his father. His father lived in Bunkerville, which is just north of Las Vegas. We went up to visit him. I went up with him, and we approached him. His father was out on a tractor working out in the field, and when we got to, just as we started to drive down into the valley where we could see him, why, we saw him stop the tractor, get out, walk over to a tree and pick up a shotgun and walk back and kick the pheasant out from under by where the tractor was and shot the pheasant. And when we got over there, why, we were kidding him about that, and he says, "Yeah, there was this hollow tree out there, and he kept a shotgun in it, because very often when he would be out there plowing the fields, why, he would see these pheasants, and so he would shoot a pheasant for dinner." And we said, "Well, a pheasant season isn't open." And he says, "I didn't shoot it for that. I shot it for dinner." So it didn't matter to him when the season was. Another couple that we enjoyed and had a good friendship with was George and Dorothy Goshen. Dorothy had lived in Ogden and lived only just about a block or so away from where Jeannie was, and they knew each other as growing up there in Ogden. And so we got acquainted with them. George had worked in the mutual, and he was working with the scouts the same time as I was, and so we got pretty well acquainted when we were working with the boys. And then another couple that we became very good friends with was Vern and Doris Christensen. Vern is the one that I told about getting together with, and we bought a jewelry store in Riverside. So they moved to Riverside. Our family kind of grew up together, and we were very good friends. And then he went back to Las Vegas, but we still maintained a very close relationship and still do. Every time we go through Vegas, well, we'd usually see him, and every once in a while I'll pick up the phone and a voice will just start telling me a joke, and that's the way we keep in touch with each other. Also, that we bought a home out in Paradise Valley after I left the motel, and I think I told about the home. It was a little ranch style home. It wasn't real big, but it was very nice. It was on 2.5 acres of ground, and it was right out in the desert. And we had a very little land, or, I mean, very little landscaping around it. I couldn't afford much landscaping, but I did put in a little section of lawn and a few flowers, and it worked out real nice. A couple of funny things happened while we're out there. Being right in the desert, why, there were a lot of scorpions around. So I explained to Michael, who was then about 5 years old, and I explained to him what a scorpion was and showed it to him and said, now don't ever touch them or get close to them because they're very dangerous. They can sting you and the sting can be very painful. Well, one afternoon late, I was working in the yard, and the houses out there were pretty far apart, so for him to play with the little neighbor boy, he had to walk about a half a mile over to the other house. And he came back through the desert after he'd been over there playing, and I saw him coming, and he walked around the corner of the house, and here he was carrying a scorpion by the leg. And I about panicked. I said, I thought I told you that those were dangerous. And he said, well, I killed it first, Dad. And he had killed the scorpion, then brought it home to show it to me. Another thing that happened, we had our own well on that property. There was no city water. We were outside the city limits, and so this well went down. They had hit good fresh water at 95 feet deep, so there was 95 feet of pipe going down in and then coming back out. And one day it quit working, and I talked to two or three people about it, and one of the guys who seemed to know something about it said, well, in the desert out there, like that, sometimes sand will get down in the bottom of there and get in the valve and stick the valve, and then the water it won't open when the water starts to pump, when the pump goes on to pump it up. So they wanted a lot of money to come out and repair it, and I didn't have a lot of money, so I decided I'd repair it myself. I had built a little pump house around where the pump was, and so I went out and cut a hole in the roof and made a trap door on the top of it. And then I had this George Goshen come out and help me, and we rigged up our own method of taking that pipe up there in 21 foot lengths, the pipe as it would go down. So we'd pull it up, then we'd disconnect, then we'd pull up the next section and disconnect, and we got up we got about over halfway up with this, and the pump motor and all is heavy, and it's on the first section of it, and we got about halfway up with it, and the weight of it got away from us. We were doing it with a chain. I was standing up on top of the little building, and I had gloves on, but when it started to go and the weight of it started back down in the well, the chain went through my hands so fast that it just ripped all the leather off the gloves and the first layer of skin off my hands, and finally it settled, it reached its settling point and stopped. And so I went in and just bandaged up my hands and covered up, washed off the blood, and got a different pair of gloves, and we went back up and pulled it out, got the thing up to the top, cleaned out the valve. In fact, the guy had suggested a better kind of valve for us, which he had sold me, so I put the new valve on the bottom of it, and we lowered it back down in the well and hooked it all back up, and it worked. But it was pretty disastrous on my hands for a while. It really really ripped the skin of them pretty bad when that chain went through, and I didn't want to just let it drop, so I tried to hold on to it. Also, there was a dude ranch out there fairly close to where we were, and I got real good friends with the guy that owned the dude ranch, and he had horses as part of his for his customers that came out to stay on the dude ranch. So George and I would go out and ride real often. He wanted us to ride them because they didn't get ridden enough to keep them tame, and so he thought that was a good idea if we would come out and ride. And so we did that real often. We enjoyed riding. I enjoyed riding horses, and he had some good horses, and so we used to ride out through the desert a lot, and that was very enjoyable. And then it came up, there's a celebration time in Las Vegas called Eldorado Days. It's held each May, and they have a big parade, and it's just a big celebration time for the whole city to get together on it. So For about a year before that was coming on, I grew a beard and a big mustache, and then I rode this black horse and had my cowboy outfit on, and so I rode in the Eldorado parade and with a beard. The funny thing was the beard came out almost red. It was a real auburn color, and that wasn't the color of my hair, and it really looked kind of funny. So after the celebration was over with, why, I shaved that off. But I did get a picture of me with that beard and mustache, and I wore my Grandpa Walker's cutaway Prince Albert coat and the top hat, and took a picture of me with that. And Leola put on Mother's wedding dress, and so we are together in a picture kind of depicting old style, old looking, and I guess we are old looking now, but we weren't too old looking then. Those are just a few of the interesting things. I may fill up this side of the tape with other things that I may have forgotten to put in when I was following through in a general way the rest of the history.